Red was here a second ago. I don't know if he dropped off for some reason. Red's a fan of privacy because he works with Secret Network and he works with Shade Protocol too, I think, to some level. The other, Carter Wetzel, is part of Shade Protocol also. So they're pretty familiar with just various privacy things. But I'm sure they're interested in like the privacy narrative picking up also. Because usually, like, when one privacy coin goes up, like, it's possible that all of them will go up because people tend to try to find, like, similars in the market or comparables.
Hey, Seffy, it looks like a Rabid Miner or Mining did a build on a 7900X, and he just posted a new video. So if you want to check out what he's doing, that would be something to
watch. Yeah. I can probably tune my thing based on whatever he said.
Yeah.
I suspect I can get more than 15,400 because on... one of those.
Oh, I know you can. I saw somebody doing it in Windows and they were getting 22 or 24 with your same. You have a 7900X, right?
X, yes.
Yeah, you should be able to get a lot higher. You just have to figure out what it wants to, like, you know, how it wants to
do that. I definitely need to learn what to do about it because I don't want to break it. So I'm like, I've been kind of like kid gloving it. And the other problem is like the stupid motherboard is not transmitting a temperature signal to the...
I saw somebody else with a 7900X also having that same issue. I don't think it's yours particular motherboard. Yeah. I'm saying. I think it's a compatibility issue so far with like Hive or whatever.
Whatever the issue is with it, like it makes me nervous because then I can't monitor the temp without going into BIOS and I can't go into BIOS without shutting down the miner and then the temperature drops really quickly and I don't know what the hell is going on.
Did you try issuing that package I sent you?
No, you know, I need to do that. Like I need to hop on there and do that.
That'll give you that'll show you your temperatures on your CPUs.
Okay. I think
it's not the easiest, but it'll work.
Yep. So I'll try to push it a little bit more because there's a website that says you can get like 19,500 on it. And the fact that I'm only like getting in 15,000 something has seemed weird to me. So something's not, I got it to boost a little bit by like taking all the cores and like doing a -30 on the voltage on all of them. It's like a range of like -0 to -300. So I only did -30 on all the cores based on some character on YouTube that did something for some other purpose. And it wasn't really for mining.
Is that through like using like the PBO?
Yeah.
Like precision boost?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can do a lot better than that. Because what that's doing is it's turning down, it's keeping your core frequencies the same, but it's turning down the voltage so that it allows them to go up higher without overheating.
So I could try to trim that voltage down and then
it's still very inefficient. Like their PBO, like AMD Ryzen's PBO is set for people to like it's so that anybody can overclock their PC without like breaking it. Because back in the days, you know, when before that you used to have to do very manual stuff and people would break their shit all the time.
Okay. So but, I should try to like,
essentially it's just a big waste.
Those numbers like, down a little bit more.
You should try doing it manually is what I'm telling you. Like the precision boost optimization, the PBO is very wasteful with it when it comes to mining. But at the same time, if it's giving you more.
Hold on. In manual, what I mean is like, you know, it's the one where you can like go in and either change every single core separately.
Yeah. Or no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You can change all the cores at once. And like some people are changing like some cores like to a higher degree than others. I'm not sure why they do that.
Yeah, don't do that because that's like that. And the reason why I say that is that if you screw up on one of them, it's going to be so hard to tell which one. And then you're going to like be, you know, banging your head against the wall saying, why am I having problems?
There's too many permutations.
One core that is like acting up on you. What most people will do is just change the socket, like the actual voltage that goes to the entire socket. And then they'll just lock all the cores.
I couldn't find that. I couldn't find a setting that does that for the whole socket.
I can show you where it is. After this, after we get off, so we don't bore everybody out of their mind. Yeah, but I'll just find out whatever. It's MSI. Okay, I'll send you a screenshot for it.
Maybe it's a shitty motherboard. You think? Like maybe it's like
I just no. I use the crappiest ones that are out there, man. You just have to. They're more like you have to finesse them a little more. Is all it is. Like, and sometimes they don't call. Like the stupid part is some of these manufacturers call the same things different names.
Exactly. So it's like depending on what they call it, like one of the videos I watched online, it was like they called it a CPU voltage ratio or something. Or
some of them call it like BDDR. Like there's all these different terms.
And the weird thing is that review that I saw was on an MSI motherboard, and this one's an MSI, but it doesn't have the same nomenclature. So I'm like, what the hell am I looking at? Like that's what makes it tricky to figure out how to do these things. Like it's more the naming and the labeling. And then when you go to do it, watch a video on it, you're like, wait, like, I don't know what I just watched. It doesn't have any of the same shit on my motherboard. And so that's what's confusing. And I think that's why I'm not getting the results that I want yet, is like just getting the right information.
RAM is really big deal too. Like once you overclock your RAM, you're going to see a lot more.
Oh, cache. Really? Okay.
Yeah. Like so that's what I was telling you. If you can get up to 6,000 with the same timing, you'll probably see 2,000 or 3,000 more hashes per second.
What's a rational amount of increase in frequency that like is acceptable, you'd say?
Well, if it's already set up as 50, so like I have some that are set up for 3,200 and I push them to 3,600 or 3,800, no problem.
So is there like a percentage that would be considered standard or what?
I don't know. I guess we could do that math and find out, but what most people do, Steffi, is they push it until it crashes. So you just, until it's, you know, you push it till it's stable or until it's not stable anymore. And then you go down a little bit till it is, and then that's your max.
Interestingly, my hash rate has gone up a bit more. It's like 16,000 now. Is there a reason why it just climbs over time? Is it like...
It just gets more efficient as it like trains, and the XM rig is getting more like with difficulty and everything. It's just tuning in.
I see.
Because it like does vary though. Like some of mine they range like 500 hashes a second, like any, you know, throughout the day. Like sometimes my 3950 will be 15, and other times it's like 14.5.
Is that a function of the difficulty in some way, or is this some function of like the temperature of your processor or some other thing?
Probably both, combination.
I'm going to try to hop on here and like see if I can get into the BIOS, like you said, and like change the RAM and see what happens. I just wasn't sure like how much shit I could break by modifying it. Like, is it actually possible to destroy it, or is it just simply gets unstable and you have to reboot?
Yeah, you can destroy it if you throw too much volts at stuff. Throwing too little doesn't. It just crashes. The worst thing you're probably going to do is make it to where it like soft bricks it, where you have to remove your CMOS battery.
Right, right. And then you have to like reset everything because you'll lose all your settings, huh?
Yeah, you get really you get good at resetting everything though.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You learn where everything is real fast. Or you can just resave a profile on a USB stick. Like once you get it all dialed in, if you want to do like production, if anybody's listening in the audience too, if you buy all the same motherboards and then just save a profile, you can sit there and load the profile on all your new ones and then, you know, make it real simple.
So you'd save to like USB or something and then you would just...
Yeah, you save to like some USB stick or some media, whatever it'll let you use. And then you hit the, like they're in that, somewhere in the menus, they're all different, all these manufacturers, but they all have the same one. There's like a save or a load profile and it just lets you save overclocks or all your settings, basically. Your BIOS settings.
Here's a question just based on like just going to Amazon or whatever and looking for shopping for chips and things. You have like AMD chips that have way higher hash rates, like you get to 30,000, 50,000, 60,000, and their price, of course, goes up.
Those are all epics.
Yeah, and not only
you're in the highest one you can get to, and like and with consumer grade stuff. Everything else is you're getting into server/business stuff.
Okay. And then once you do that, like what's the problem? Like it's just
once you do that, you just have to like there's no problem. It just things get different. So instead of using regular DDR non-ECC memory, you have to use what's called ECC memory, which is like error correcting stuff.
Okay.
Things just get more expensive is all. So like instead of using one processor on per board, now you have like two or four. So you have, you know, everything just gets ramped up, like more memory, more power, but you get more hash. And so like the people that are building big farms, yeah, they're not buying, some of them are buying like what I did where you buy a bunch of 3900s, but a lot of them are buying epics.
Okay. All right. Here's
you can buy some used epics too, like on from Amazon or from eBay, from like people who order them where they come with a motherboard and it's like a combo. You get everything in one. It's like $500. That's a pretty good route. It's just that's primarily going to be used for mining, like because you wouldn't use it for much else. It's not like your 7900X where you can use it for gaming and AI and like all sorts of stuff, and you'll be able to sell it to a consumer grade to Joe Blow a year from now. Like right, the epics are very specialized. Don't
even bother going to the bigger stuff.
I mean, you can. You're just going to a different crowd of buyers and sellers, and like it's a lot more niche and it's smaller, and like it's a lot more competitive too. Like I know that NVIDIA just came out with a brand new, server grade for all their new AI stuff that they're doing. I think they call it like the Grace super chip or whatever. But so now you're starting to compete with all that kind of stuff. It's just a different world.
So I'm on the sort of like DRAM configurator here.
Is there one called like memory configurate or like memory it or like something like that where it has
try it.
There you go. So click on that. And then your current profile, like you should have the current expo profile that you selected. It should show you all your timings. Like it'll say like 38, 38, 38, 95 or whatever that
mine's
is.
46, 45, 45, 90. So I'm going to keep that same concept.
Exactly. You want to keep those same timings, but then instead of choosing 5,600, choose like 6,000.
Let's see. But the problem is that those timings aren't available in the 6,000. So I just
It's available is what your options are.
Now there's one with like a blank next to it, and then there's one with a star at the end. I don't know what the difference in that is. It's like a little star asterisk symbol at the end for some reason.
I would try the blank one first. The star probably is one because they're so there's an FL clock speed too sometimes, but I don't want to get into that. It can get kind of confusing. But you, I would try to go the next size up first. So if you're at 5,600 and the next one up is like 5,800 or 62, whatever has the same timing, try that.
Okay. So we're going to, so pushing this up to the 6,000 level, from 5,600 to 6,000 is like a reasonable jump.
Yep.
And then like the worst that can happen is what? It's going to freeze up and not like,
it won't boot.
Oh, am I going to have to flash the, or like erase the BIOS if this happens or no?
No, you'll have to clear the CMOS if it doesn't boot sometimes. So a lot of these things, and that's like the worst that happened. What will probably more likely happen if it doesn't work is it's going to sit there and like try, because it's slow, you know, like these 7,000. So it's going to sit there for like a minute and a half and try to time. Like, cause what it does is when it boots up, it basically runs it through a quick setup to make sure it can like communicate and proper. It does a quick check. And if it can't check itself, like if it fails, it'll just revert itself down to the default, and then it'll boot back into the BIOS and tell you that it didn't work, basically. Like,
so one of the benefits for people that want to do this, like if you go with the exact same chip someone else has and they've already optimized it, it's going to save you a ton of time sorting all this nonsense out. Because it does take a bit of time, because if each different DDR chip is different, the RAM, and like depending which processor you get, like, and then the BIOS is slightly different each of these in terms of like what you can tune and whatever. So it does get a little confusing and a little bit of a learning curve when you have all this.
It depends too. Some people have fun doing this. Some people pull their hair out. So like that's something too that people need to understand.
I think you and me are
you like tinkering with stuff, this is going to be fun. But if you don't like tinkering with stuff, then do what Steffi's saying, where like you buy, you go to like Rabid Mining and you look at all of his stuff and you just buy the same stuff and you copy somebody like that.
Yeah, for dorks like you and me, it's like this is kind of like an exciting thing to kind of like.
Exactly. I like to tinker and like see how much I can get out of something.
If,
and
if it's too easy, it's not fun enough, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like playing a game. It did boot, so I'm gonna see if it like
so now you should be able to check your hash, and I guarantee you it's gonna be higher. You also would, by doing this, you're gonna use a little more electricity too, but
okay,
the electricity thing is the cheap part in terms of
electricity. If you're
spec mining if you're spec mining, you're trying to get these coins, you know, like you said, to be worth x amount of dollars in a year from now. Like the extra 20 cents you spent today on electricity is nominal. No one cares.
Okay, so I rebooted the thing. We'll see what kind of numbers we start getting out of the box here. It takes a second for it to sort of like start running the miner again a little bit. It did show up as on my chart as 6,000 megahertz, 16 gig DDR now.
Yep.
So I'm curious like how much impact the memory makes, because I wasn't sure when I was going to buy the 6,000.
It's huge, huge. Like RandomX is huge. Yeah, it's very important on RandomX. On the rest of the CPU algorithms, it doesn't matter.
But so on really RandomX, I got the wrong type of memory on this then, basically.
Kind of like, it's one of those things where like you can definitely get like the fastest timings that are closest together and spend a ton of money and like have better hash, but then you're spending, you know, so much more money on RAM that by the time it pays for itself, is it worth it?
Yeah, you don't want to get to the point where you're basically paying for like another computer.
Exactly. And that's where it kind of like RAM, like the difference between RAM is like $100 or $200, you know, and like for the same stuff, just faster timing. So like you have to, like I said, you should really do the math. For anybody out there should really do the math and ask themselves if they're going to get $100 extra of hash over whatever period of time they're planning on mining.
Yeah, I think before I was getting 15.4, 15.4 or like 15,000, 400 hash per second. And now it only just started, so it's going to take time to spool up a little bit, but it's at 16,000 hash per second now. So that was a pretty easy tweak to get a little extra juice out of it.
You could probably even go higher. I would keep pushing it up until it crashes on you.
Okay. So like,
personally, that's what I do. Like I said, it's where you start getting,
now,
because you're using like the,
worry
you're
about
using the preset. What'd you say?
Okay. Do I have to then worry about cooling these things or what? Like what's the,
no. Like they should stay fine. Because they have like heat sinks or like little heat things on them. But what I was going to say is that like where you should worry about breaking shit is when you start changing, like, cause those are all presets that you're using. So like it automatically like selects all the power and everything that's being delivered to the RAM. Okay. But if you start like manually changing stuff and like other menus, that's where you can like
Yeah.
So just try to stay away from like the if you're going inside, if you're going inside more menus than one inside your BIOS, you're probably like in terms of your chip or your RAM, you're probably into some stuff you shouldn't be into.
Yeah. You're into like some OEM shit that like only a manufacturer would be playing with.
Exactly. But what most of these home miners are doing is literally what you just did, where they're selecting a profile or they're just checking or they're just turning down the overall voltage. And again, the only thing that happens is you crash and then you have to turn it back up or modify it a little bit.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, yeah, I got a little bit more juice out. I'm going to reboot this thing again and like try something else. So the next thing to try, I think, is what you'd mentioned before, which is like seeing if I can get the voltages down further on the chip itself.
I would take off PBO and I'll send you the instructions so that we don't bore everybody else out. Are you mining at all yet? Have you tried it?
I haven't yet. And my issue is that I'm a little retarded, so I don't really know how to do it. But I kind of want to start just for fun, but I'm wondering, so is it at the current price level, is it worth it from an electricity standpoint?
Yeah, it is I pay 11 cents per kilowatt hour. So it depends where you're at, like what, but I could do some maths and I think it would be worth it.
Just to give you an idea, like the current price of the coin, you're basically making about like $50 a month mining on this thing. And of course the cost of the rig, you know, to do that in my case was like around $750. So it pays for itself, like, you know, in maybe 6 months or more. At current price, our presumption is that the coin price can be higher. There is some electricity cost. It's about the amount of your like chip or whatever. So let's say it's like 150 watts, 200 watts. You're probably talking about the like, you know, how much is that? That's like an old school light bulb, pretty much. Like it's like a big big cup. It's like a big halogen light bulb, basically.
So that's not bad. And then internet, like it doesn't take much internet, right? Like bandwidth?
No, not at all. No.
Yeah, bandwidth wise, you don't have to worry about that at all.
Bandwidth's not the issue. You just have to have like a basic level internet connection of some kind.
Okay. Because I have like this extra Alienware that's just like sitting around. And it's like it's like a year old or whatever, but it's CPU mining, right?
Yeah. You should try it for sure.
Okay.
All you gotta do is you go to the if you head over to the website on ZephyrProtocol.com, they'll have a section related to sort of mining, and it has a little section called Start Mining or something, and it'll point you to like the XM Rig software that you basically install and run. And you have to like turn off your security settings and shit, because like it won't, your Windows is going to think it's a virus or whatever, and so you have to turn that off, install it. And then what you're doing is basically running XM Rig, which is the exact same thing for Monero, by the way. So it's not a new product or anything like that. So it's exact same XM Rig from the Monero Foundation or whoever. And so what you're doing is you're running the software and then you're entering in like your, which pool you're going to pick. And that's pretty easy to do. And then you're going to take your Zephyr wallet and, you know, plug that in. There's a couple of like minor settings involved too, that like you can tweak but you can get started quite quickly as far as like having it running. And then the tweaking part, you know, someone can walk you through that part. It's not too bad. Well,
is it, how different is it from like mining Bitcoin, for example? Because I know Bitcoin, you know, you're just solving these proof of work problems, right? Is that essentially what we're doing?
It's the same exact setup as like a Bitcoin miner. Same, because with a Bitcoin miner, you're doing the same thing. You're getting into the miner program and you're pointing it at a pool and then you hit the mine button. And that's what Seffy just told you or described to you, is the XM rig is the miner program. You point the pool at whatever Zephyr pool you want to mine to, and then you let it mine.
Well, I know for Bitcoin, it's like graphics card based, right?
Bitcoin is ASIC now, but you can mine it with anything. It's just that it's not very... you can mine Zephyr or Random X with a GPU or other things as well, but it won't be efficient.
Gotcha. Okay. So if I set up my Alienware, I can make like, you know, a little Zephyr 2 a month or something, maybe?
Probably, yeah. It depends what processor you have. Which if you want to send me the like the name of the processor, I could probably give you an approximate hash of what to expect.
So on the CPU here, real quick, like what do I turn on and off? So you said like in the advanced CPU configuration, turn off something or another.
Oh, you're going to want to turn off PBO.
Oh, turn it off completely.
Yeah. Because you don't want that, because what it's trying to do right now is you're letting the motherboard's firmware try to overclock and do weird shit while it's trying to mine. Basically, it's probably just putting a bunch more heat and electricity out that it doesn't need to.
I think you're probably right, because it doesn't do anything to reduce voltage specifically.
No, it doesn't.
So it's just sort of like trying its best to give you the best boost possible if you're gaming.
It's great for that. Like if you're gaming on it on Windows, like PBL yeah. works awesome for that.
Okay. So
for mining, 4i7 10th gen on this computer, apparently.
What'd you say?
I have an Intel Core i7 10th gen on this Alienware computer.
What's the like i7? What's the actual? Does it tell you? Like,
let me see.
Okay, so I turned that 10th off.
Generation doesn't tell you enough, I guess.
No, it doesn't tell me enough. It'd be like saying that you bought a Porsche, like a 1990 Porsche, but you didn't tell me the model.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is like you're not going to know exactly what your hash rate is until you just start playing with the computer a little bit and see. And if you've already owned the computer, you've already paid with it, then all you're worried about is are you beating electricity cost and mining yourself some, and you probably will more than likely. It doesn't take much to beat the electricity cost. That's not the expensive part at all. That's like
no. I think when I did the math like for you, Seffy, or for us, it was like $5 per Zeph to mine. $4.97 if it was 11 cents per kilowatt hour.
Right. So if he's in New York,
so if you could sell that one Zeph for $50 or whatever price it is, that's your profit in between, or in terms of like how much room there is to for electricity to for your rate to go higher and still be profitable.
All right, well, you guys have convinced me, so I'll set up the mining rig right now. I mean, this Alienware is literally just sitting here not doing anything, so
yeah, just play with it. So I'm on the CPU settings here, so I turned off what you told me, because I saw one YouTube video where that's what they did. They just used Precision Boost, and I guess that was probably like a gaming dude or whatever. He wasn't into
yeah, that was for gaming. Like it's just telling you how to overclock, general overclock for like
so
anything.
Like, but the thing is, like, I saw one video where what they did was they just used a setting called a CPU core ratio percentage.
Yes.
And they also had a line where you could just simply up the megahertz of the but this does not seem to have those settings. That's what's confusing.
It definitely does. It's probably just named something different.
Like, give me an example, maybe. Do you have any like theories
of what it might be? Let me can you send me a screenshot? It will probably say core voltage, yeah.
There's something called chipset core voltage, and it's set to auto.
What's underneath that?
Chipset 1P8 voltage. I don't know what that is.
What's above it?
CPU 1P8 voltage. There's CPU. What's above that? CPU VDDIO voltage. And there's one at the very top, CPU core voltage.
That's what you want. So, does that say auto right now?
Yes.
So click on that, and it'll, you'll have a bunch of options. It'll be like offset or like...
Yeah, there's override plus offset. Override.
Is there just an override? Hit go to override, and then that it should, when you hit override, it'll come up with, it'll show you a voltage on it, right? It comes up with like 1.35.
Yep. So now what do I do with it?
So that now what we need to do is figure out what...
I'm running at 1.34 volts at the moment.
Like yeah, that's the stock standard default. So you can try bumping it down to 1.1.
1.1, okay.
But before you save, above that, there'll also be for your, because right now you still have it set up to auto clock for to go as high as it can for the cores.
Uh-huh.
And you want to change that from auto to be a fixed core. And I think you have to, I think you're the 7900X like is based at 4.6 megahertz. I think that's the base clock. So you probably want to lock it at 4.6 or 4600 is what it would be called, I think.
I'm trying to find where that is. Is that the CPU switching frequency? No.
It could be called CPU frequency. It would be above your where your voltage and everything is. It's probably towards the top of the screen.
That's the thing. Like there isn't anything like
that. Even above like where you did your memory, like where you did your memory overclocking, go above that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a what's called advanced CPU configuration in there. And then there's like PSS support, PPC adjustment. There's a bunch of boring things in here, but nothing that specifically covers the overclocking. And then there's AMD overclocking, but that just has the precision overdrive shit in it. Unless I have to go to advanced in there. And then if I go to advanced, it allows me to do like curve optimizer and all those things.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. It just shouldn't need to, but I'm looking it up for you right now.
CPU boost clock override. So they have some of this in the PBO like details, but that's the only thing I have.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. You definitely don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to kind of get this to. Yeah, I don't know if it's like it's this particular motherboard they gimped it or something, you know, where they don't have enough like capability.
No, they didn't. It's just it's MSI, man. They're weird. Like
they just put like wacky names for shit. Cause I like,
yeah, they all put different. So MSI probably calls it CPU base clock under the overclocking menu.
Cause my hope is to figure out in this, in such a way that like, I can tell someone else, hey, get this, and this part, and then you're going to be good to go. And like, it only takes a moment.
Go up to the top.
Huh?
Go up to the top where it says like, and go to it. Are you at where it says main and advanced, right? Like you have main, advanced, boot, security.
Yeah.
Or does yours have the easy mode, CPU, memory, storage, fan info?
Let me see. It says like, wait, which menu are you talking about? The settings menu or the overclock menu?
Either. Is it on this? Like, is the overclock on the?
Yeah, they have like overclock section. Like the whole section is that.
Got it. I'm looking at their screenshots, just trying to figure out what they call it in it.
Yeah, like in the overclock section, it says OC Explore mode, and there's normal and expert. I'm presuming that's expert. It lets you go into deeper.
Yeah, you don't. It shouldn't be under expert. It should still be available under the normal.
Okay. And then there's like the AMD overclocking section, but that doesn't have.
So MSI calls this stuff, right? Like they have voltage setting and then DRAM setting and all that. Like they have sections, right?
Yeah.
When the overclocking. Like,
so the CPU setting section just doesn't have very much in it. Like it goes to DRAM and then the next section's voltage. And then there's at the end, there's like other, which is.
Yeah,
like
but it's above other. That. So it's above that. So it says, I'm going to send you this screenshot here.
Mm-hmm. I think like maybe it's a BIOS version issue or something.
It could be. It might not be, but I still think that you have it there. You just may not be knowing what it looks like, or I could just be mistaken.
Hmm.
Okay, I just sent it to you in DM.
Okay. Yeah, this is a very different, like, See, yours just has CPU ratio in it, and it's all color and shit. Like, mine's a very different BIOS. It just looks like completely different. Like, yours, this is Click BIOS.
That's not the same one.
Five. It had, but yours has like all sorts of interesting shit up top, like Game Boost and AXMP or whatever, and it's in red. Mine's like in black and white. It has a whole different vibe to it. So I don't
I think I might have even I think I found yours. Then let's see if it is. I'm gonna send you another one.
Okay. And then there's like an easy mode, and then the advanced mode. Clearly, the advanced mode's the one to go into on this, because otherwise you don't get the overclock controls.
Yeah, you might have just got a cheaper one, but it still should be able to overclock, especially if you updated it to the like the newest one. Is this the one that you have?
No, this isn't it either. They have so many different damn versions of this. It's ridiculous. It's so funny. It's like, what is this bullshit? No, it doesn't look like that either.
What version is it? Can you go to the version screen and read me the version, and then I can look at it that way?
Yeah. Let's see. Version's going to be where? Shit.
In the about or in the first screen.
Oh, BIOS version, yeah. E7E28 AMS. Yep, that's the BIOS version. And its build date's pretty recent, August 14th.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you're right. It says it starts with like high efficiency mode on the top. For overclocking, the first one, it goes a high efficiency mode, memory, try it. So there is no like CPU thing, huh?
Yeah. So this is the problem. So most of the time I've wasted, I think, is because it's an issue with the BIOS on this thing.
It's just a different one. There's still going to be a way to do it. When you click on the advanced, hold on, let me read all these options.
I'm definitely in advanced, and then you get into like, oh wait, here's something. AMD, see, some of these you don't realize are buttons until you push them, and then you're like, wait a minute, like AMD CBS CPU common options. This has a whole series of shit in it, but these are very deep.
Yeah, those are what I mean. If once you get into those type of menus, you don't want to touch those things. We just need to change the ratio.
Yeah, exactly. The ratio is what I saw in some YouTube videos, but that's what I couldn't find in my BIOS for some reason. So, like, I got some boost performance with the precision boost, but it was using more power for sure. That's the problem with using PBO. And definitely the fan started running a lot more because of it, so it was definitely using more power, but and getting hotter. CPU core voltages. Yeah, this is like, is it possible to flash a different BIOS onto here?
No, you have to flash the BIOS that they want. Like you can do the most updated one for this board, but you have to use that.
But that's it.
Yeah.
I'm going to check on and see if like maybe I missed out on something BIOS wise when I chose this update, but I don't think so. I just think I just pulled the latest BIOS update, flashed it, and that was the end of it. We're just talking some bullshit here, but hey, Cheetah, what's going on, man? You've been doing good?
Yeah, doing good. I've been looking into the mining thing as well. I have an old Intel, but I also have a more recent, like bought it 2 years ago, Ryzen 9 5900HX. I mean, it's on a laptop, so probably not worth it to mining, but do you think I could get a rig, set it up, and then just kind of have it chilling in the corner of my apartment and let that mine? Like, which,
yeah,
I guess what components do you recommend, Seffy? Have you been pretty happy with the output of yours, or do you think it's worth it to step up the initial cost for an extra couple thousand
I think the one, like, again, I bought the second rig and I haven't had it come in yet, but I think the sweet spot in terms of price looks like the 7950X. So it's a higher one than the first one I built, just that I have here. So I ordered the next one. Once I get that one running, hopefully I get a better, like, arrangement. I think half the problem I'm having with this one is I'm having overclocking issues because for some reason the settings in this damn thing are not very obvious. I think it's like, I have no idea what the issue is in all seriousness, but like it, I think if you have a motherboard that's a slightly higher than the, like the absolute base model, especially on AMD5. So the 620 level motherboard, it's like an A620 chip for motherboards for AMD. This one just, I think, is like a little bit gimped. I think you could go for the A650 level motherboards. But the problem is that's a double the price of the board. You go from like a $75 board to like $150 or something. So, you know, whether that's worth it or not, probably, especially if you have like a fairly good overclocking processor, like a 7950. But again, it also depends on whether you're going to use this computer for something else or not. Because if it's purely, like, what's that?
If I'm using it for just my, like, this is like completely dedicated, right? And I've already got the hardware. Why wouldn't I just do XMR stack?
So when you go down, so can you hear me?
Well, you could probably do XMR stack, but GPUs don't have a lot of role in CPU processing. So you can do
You don't want to burn out. You don't want to burn out your GPU trying to do this. You won't. You'll hardly get any Zeph at all. It's not worth it. It's not worth it at all.
Just CPU then.
Just CPU. I mean, just for kicks, I modified mine to run on my GPU and my CPU, and I got like negligible extra. I'm not running any kind of great GPU or CPU though. I'm purely just, so I just turned off the GPU part and I'm doing it on my CPU on like a really old laptop. And I'm getting, if I had 100% uptime, I'd probably make about, if I was lucky, 0.1 of a Zeph every month. And so that's right. Really not going to make me any money, but at least I'll have some
crypto native digital currency. What are you talking about? That's going to make
you fucking rich. Well, we'll see. I think that even though it's an old laptop, it's hardly any power. I'm not doing anything with it. And I'll get even a little bit of Zeph in a native wallet that I didn't have to pay for with fiat. You know, so it's crypto native, it's private, and I think it's worth doing. And I'm doing my little bit to support the network and the hash rate. I'm doing like 800 to 1,000 hashes per second, is it? Is that what that goes per second? So not even like mega hashes or kilo hashes, or just like plain old hashes, about 800 of them to 1,000. And but I'm doing my part to keep you safe and secure.
It's really good to see Zeph just like hanging around. What's it at right now? Around $30?
35, I think.
Damn, bro.
It looks so many people.
So many
people. It looked today.
Like, sure. I mean, the market, if Bitcoin tanks down to 30, like, yeah, of course, it's probably going to get dragged down. Or I guess alts could pump if capital rotates. But it's like so many, it just goes to show, man, like so many people are hoping for that dip and it's probably not going to come. Like all these motherfuckers that are looking at TA, you know, looking at the charts, oh, this support zone, et cetera. It's like, dude, this thing is highly illiquid. A little bit of money can move it both directions. A lot of people see the hype and attention. Like what other coin has this much social engagement that's this early on that actually has some utility? So all these people that are like, oh, it's going to go back down to $5 or whatever. It's like, yeah, I mean, I guess it could, but who the fuck is going to sell that much Zeph?
Like, yeah, and why would you sell? Like, it makes no sense to sell right now. Like, it's not like we're late cycle and it's like, oh, this thing is like super high market cap and I need to move some money around. Like, it's like, no, the market cap's low and we're early. So what's the point of selling? Like,
I don't think anyone's selling, man. Like people are, I don't think people are selling. I think people are trading, if that makes sense. You know, like they're
going in and out. Yeah.
They're just purely going in and out to try to accumulate more. But like no one's selling the project to be like, oh yeah, I'm selling my Zeph so I can buy more ETH. Like fuck that. Like what is your ETH going to produce? A 3X this cycle? Maybe, you know, maybe 5x if you're really lucky, realistically a 3x, 4x. So with that being said, it's like, you know, who's selling? Just people that want to accumulate more Zeph.
Logan, it feels like,
sure, they may get lucky, but
it feels like when like ETH and Doge really start moving, it means like retail's here. What it tells me is like, because you don't see a lot of the brand names moving, that's like just simply a message to me that says like, the randos aren't here yet, picking up Coinbase mm-hmm. and buying shit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen quite a few posts being like, why isn't ETH moving? It's like people who are, for example, with like IMX, like Sepia, I told you IMX is a really good buy because I saw that, like, I knew all these games are coming, and like, I guess May 1st, there's going to be like a huge announcement. We're hearing whispers of it. So like those types of plays, it's, you know, related to ETH. So I would say on the risk spectrum, it's like, if you believe in gaming and you believe it's going to happen on ETH, okay, like IMX is a relatively, it's still high risk because gaming isn't really proven, but at the same time, it's like, it's on a safe blockchain that everyone's going to want to kind of propel forward in the future.
Yeah, and the coin's, you know, not going to zero.
And you have like the smart people that they can analyze the market and be like, okay, where is the ball going to be? And let's start putting money in those projects, which is like, that's what we're seeing right now. Like, hey, Zeph could be something. I've got some dry powder. Let me put some money there because I'm trying to get to the end zone before the ball gets there. Whereas retail is like, oh, I see Ethereum pumping on the news. I need to buy it, right? So like what we're seeing is that first kind of phase of the bull market where people are seeing projects with momentum and they're placing capital like on a weighed scale based off of, you know, how risky they are, right? So like IMX, for example, is a much lower risk play, but still has a pretty damn high multiple compared to Zeph. You know, like Zeph could absolutely blow it out of the water with the amount of X's it does. But we're also playing with fire in the sense that it's a much smaller market cap, et cetera. But I'm seeing, you know, like I'm seeing a lot of money flow into these projects that are,
who's replying in your YouTube channel? Like what kind of crowd?
Say that again.
The who's replying, like when you do your YouTube videos here and there, like what type of people are replying to you? Like, is it like
some of the people are like, yes, yeah, some of the people were burned last cycle and like didn't want, I mean, I also have a crypto chat with like some, you know, people that made a lot with Luna and lost a lot. And a lot of them like completely checked out and now they're all jumping back in the chat and it's alive again. So it's like, that's the first kind of phase of the bull market starting is like the people who were burned, they reallocate.
Disbelief phase. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like everyone's kind of like scared at the same time that, you know, like maybe this is not really, it's another just a bear market rally, you know, but it's like, eventually it's got to turn into a bull market and it's just lines up with the, it's so funny. Cause it's every fucking like 4 year liquidity cycle, right? Like everyone's always like, oh, this time's going to be different. But what do you know? It's lining up again, like perfectly.
Sophie, for the RAM that you got, do you think it was worth it to go up to like a DDR5 or is DDR4 sufficient?
Well, DDR5 is what comes on an AMD5 motherboard. You can't use the 4. I accidentally bought some 4s and now I have like a couple of sticks that are useless. You definitely want to use the DDR5. And in that also, if you want a set of RAM that it's not just throwaway that you're going to use in the future, because like you might as well go for the 6,000 megahertz and overclock them. So I think it's probably worth just getting a decent set of RAM.
What does it look like, Sepi, as far as like for having a pretty decent setup? What would you say like the cost is to mine like one Zeph? You know what I mean? Like, so if I were to buy some equipment, what would you think? Like if I'm buying, what is the cost?
The existing unit without overclocking it, it's running like around, and like me having made a shitty decision on like which RAM I bought and whatever, like I'm getting about, at this current Zeph rate, well, it's about 1.5 Zeph, per month, not per day. No, that'd be a lot. Wow. So you're basically pulling like $50 worth a day, a month. So it takes a period of time to pay off your computer essentially.
Well, so
now that's a current Zeph price. If Zeph's like, you know, $300, that'd be a very different thing, right? So
if Zeph price shot through the roof, then you're super profitable because the mining wouldn't necessarily be that much more difficult, but the price is up.
Yeah, well, the mining difficulty does increase when price goes up, though, because like more people jump to mine. But at the same time, you want to be mining now while the price is low. That's why I got that.
How much did you spend on that unit that you're talking about right there?
So the most recent one I bought, I went a little bit like more aggressive. I got like a 7950X, which is the like the sweet spot in my opinion as far as like the AMD chips. So if you're on Amazon or if you can pull up Amazon, you can kind of click a few of these and like just bookmark them. But like add to cart a 7950X and add to cart like an AMD 5 motherboard. And you can, the cheapest ones are the ones that don't have like Wi-Fi and shit, which you don't necessarily need. But like, if you want to use this computer for anything else, you might as well get one with Wi-Fi 6 on it. So like, you know, these run like maybe 150, it's like an MSI motherboard or a whoever, like they run about 150. So if you type AMD 5 motherboard and you see the ones that are like 150-ish, that's kind of the range. And that's like, the chipset is different. It's like the 650 chipset. So if you type like A650, AMD A650 motherboards, you'll find the ones you want.
Well, what are you looking at? Like, because I'm not looking on Amazon right now, but ballpark, what would you say, like, to set up, to have a functional rig to be able to mine Zeph, like, you know, what you have?
It depends. What it depends. Do you want a computer that's, like, useful for the future, or do you just don't give a shit? You want the most basic thing possible?
Probably just something to mine. I mean, I have two laptops, you know, like I'm not, I can give a shit less about functionality.
Yeah. I mean, laptops, I wouldn't mind on those, but if it was like, you know, a basic level thing, I think you can get for like 450. I posted some, like a shopping list for like a $650 set. You can put it in like in the group chat or whatever in Zephyr.
So if you're spending, you could spend less than $1,000 and get setup, and then you could mine. So let's say you spend $1,000, you could get a pretty good setup to mine
I paid about $900 to get like a nice hard drive, like a gaming style hard drive, a nice set of like DDR5 6000, the power supply and everything. The one I just got ordered yesterday was about $900-ish for a good one.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to have a quote unquote great one. You know, you could.
And is that that's not like your traditional like ASIC miner that's like sounds like a fucking bumblebee. No. Like that's just.
No, this is a computer. CPU. This is just a straight, this is a regular computer.
Got it. But can you mine Zeph using like an ASIC type miner or no?
It's generally ASIC resistant, so not as much. I think there may be an ASIC you can do it with, but I don't think there's.
Why and why would that be? Wouldn't they want like other miners to that?
No, because you end up with people already have a ton of these ASICs. It's hard, like the average person can't mine Bitcoin right now. You can't turn on your PC and mine Bitcoin. And increasingly it is specialized farms that are set off in places like Texas.
Is trying to get on. If you can hear me, like something's wrong with your connection. You probably have to exit the room entirely and come back. Because I keep adding you for co-host. It won't let you come back on for some reason.
But basically, you can't get the average person to turn on their computer to mine any effective level of Bitcoin that was going to make them want to do it. So yeah, the way to make so ASICs
kind of premise,
are...
Wasn't that like one of the premises of Bitcoin is to have it so like the average person... I mean, it used to be that way. And then obviously like people came in and commercialized it. But like that was not probably the...
You want it to be... What it is, Logan, is back when Bitcoin came out, there was no such thing as an ASIC device.
Yeah.
Yes.
So people were mining it on CPUs and it decentralized that way.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you ended up with a lot more average people involved, different holders, different hands.
Not only average, if you open up any sort of chain with ASIC mining now, what you're going to get is all existing ASIC miners vampiring that thing and just like leeching off liquidity from it. But they don't necessarily have any like desire to decentralize it or anything else.
Yeah, and you know what's so funny, bro, is back in 2014, I'm 31 this month, and when I was, it was 2014, so I was probably 15, 16 years old. My buddy Justin, from my hometown, you know, we went to school together. He was like, "Hey, we got to start mining this Bitcoin thing," and he literally like spent, I don't know, like a grand or two, like we pitched in together and we were mining Bitcoin back in 2014. And I completely forgot about it. And we had like a couple of Bitcoin, and this was like right before Trump got elected in 2017. I was like, oh, motherfucker, like we have Bitcoin, because it started like really going up in price, right? That was like when it went from like 1,000 to 10,000 real quick. But yeah, it's just funny because like I completely forgot about it. We met with this guy. His name is Big D. He's like a fucking, he was like cartel, like straight up like drug money down in Orange County, California.
I mean, like legal drug, like his family's cartel, but he's like legal drug money. He had a bunch of like cannabis shops and stuff. Anyway, we met with that motherfucker and we tried to pitch him on buying a bunch of Bitcoin miners and to like, we would run them for him.
It was a good way to launder. It was kind of like a good way to launder money because you could just like take your ill-begotten gains and like buy computers.
We pitched him and he, and I forgot that we did that. And I saw him years later. This was probably around like 2020. I saw him. And he was like, bro, I wish we would have like jumped on that. You were pitching me on this. I'm like, oh my God, I completely forgot about that. Cause I'm like this young kid in high school and he's, you know, in his 40s at the time. But yeah, man, we could have. So like I was mining Bitcoin technically back in 2014. And I remember sitting down with a guy that was like, yeah, I used to mine like 50 Bitcoin a night on my laptop. Like, you know, like that's how it used to fucking be, is like people would literally mine. Like, I don't even know how many, if so that was accurate, but that's what he was saying.
The problem that happened 10 with
50 a night.
Logan, the problem that happened with ASICs is if you open up an ASIC based chain now, you just get a bunch of people to just mine temporarily and then like it'll pump and dump. So there's a lot of proof of work chains that don't go anywhere now. And that's the thing. Like, so Zephyr is one of the first that's like, besides Caspa, or among the first to sort of like catch a new bid as far as like popularity.
And even Caspa has that problem where they're releasing like the companies are sort of pushing Caspa miners now. And so it's harder to mine Caspa now. And I was told by a friend that already the community is trying to fork Caspa and make it ASICs resistant because they don't want that. They want the coin they want a version of the coin under a different name to be ASICs resistant so it can have more organic growth.
So Caspa is not resistant, like, so Zeph is more resistant than Caspa.
Yes, yeah, Caspa is not resistant to ASICs, I believe, and there are specialized mining machines and stuff that are being sold that are. It's just like a nuclear arms race, right? And so by making it ASICs resistant, you buy some time. It's still possible for somebody to buy a bunch of standard CPUs, but it's not the same as having a specialized device that goes like full nuclear, that fast. We have some time for the community and the hands and the holders and the small wallets to develop more organically before the people who are purely out for profit come in and just, you know, take every bit of value that came from it.
Yeah. Is that Haven coin, whatever. People have been like, oh yeah. Haven is just a fucking. Yeah. Like
Haven's problem was like, historically, I think it had a mint burn mechanism like Luna UST. And so it got wrecked. And as a result of it getting wrecked, it's not clear that like how much confidence in that network's going to come back. Now they did modify the system, and I don't even know like what.
I mean, it's probably tarnished, bro. Like, it'll just go slow bleed, or maybe a little pungent.
There's a tendency for the tarnish not to fade, as you know. So,
Rune was tarnished, but at the same time, it's a different situation because like no one else is tackling the situation that Thorchain is, right? Like,
right.
Or there's versions of it, but it's like, they're not as good. And also when you understand what happened with Thorchain, it's like, they were welcoming people like for surface attacks, like, hey, find out where the vulnerabilities are in the system. This is chaos net. It's not main net yet.
There's another problem is once you have a stable and it depegs to the downside far. The problem is, it's not so much that it's done. It's like, who's going to pay for that liability? Like, who's going to buy all that up?
Yeah.
Right. That's the problem. And so, like, repegging or whatever doesn't really fully make sense.
What's to say it's not going to depeg again? And then it's like you're just right back in that hole. So the way that Zeph set up, it's just a lot with the over collateralization. I mean, so if Zeph pumps to, in a best case scenario, you would want minimal utilization of the stable and just like more people buying Zeph, right? So like if Zeph went to $1,000 and then the stable coin was only at like $100 million in value or something, or let's say $100 million, but Zeph's at $1,000 in price, that's really healthy for the ecosystem, right? Because then it's just like insanely over collateralized.
Yep. This is the theory at least. So
yeah. Interesting. Well, I want to buy a computer, bro. Fuck it. Let's mine some Zeph. I'm down for it.
I'll send you a list, Logan, if you want to buy the rig or if you want to do what Zeph is doing.
I'll put it on. I'll be the the mascot for Zeph, I'll be like, all right, I'm putting together this computer to mine this shit coin. Let's do it.
I'll take no, a risk, like, just for kicks. It's probably not the right phase of my moon, not the right phase of my moon to set up a mining rig, but I am interested. So I'll take one too, please, if you would.
Logan, if you want a really useful computer, I would probably do what I did, is go with the description I gave you, the 7950 with like an AMD 5 motherboard. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the route you want to take as far as like not having an obsolete computer or whatever in the going forward. Because, you know, if you've got kids in the house and stuff like that, they'll eventually need to use a computer and you're like, oh, I'm done mining now, but my kid needs a PC or whatever. Now they have one, right?
Yeah. I just hate PC. I don't like the interface, right? I love Mac.
Yeah, I'm a Mac guy too now for the longest time.
Yeah, dude, I use Photoshop and Final Cut. Like, you know, you see the creatives I make and like, that's my, like, being able to be on my iPhone and like my messages, it's just like integrates with my life so easily. Not exactly. Like, and I respect the fact that there's more customization on like Androids and PCs and stuff like that. Sure. But like that to me, like I'm all about functionality, right? So like if I like, rather just like if you were like a bodybuilder and you're like fucking huge, but you have to like waddle around, it's like, that's cool that you have all that muscle, but like you're not flexible whatsoever. So the same thing goes with me when I'm looking at technology. Right, right. It's like what is going to make me more productive throughout my day? And I mean, I met with this guy the other day that uses that Linux, and he like literally programmed his computer, like told that shit what to do. And my mind was blown watching him like work a computer, like it was part of his brain. You know, like he was that computer was an extension of him. I had never seen anyone. I didn't know that you could work a computer that way. I had no idea that that was possible, but you know, it's just levels, right? So for me, it would just be purely Zeph, because like I'm an Apple guy.
Yeah.
I gotta be that way.
No, I think that's fine.
Logan, there's a, or I guess Zeph, correct me if this would be bad, but there's a current deal for an AMD 7950X and Asus Prime B60 or 650.
Is that through like Micro Center? Is that the one?
No, this is just off Amazon. But there's a deal for $711 for those two things.
That's the Micro Center one, and they're the one doing that deal.
Yeah, it should
so be. Should I get that?
Yeah, that will work.
I would get a different one just because those motherboard. I mean, yeah, it'll work. But you can find a better deal, is what I'm saying. The reason why they do those deals is that Micro Center buys like 10,000 of those boards. And then they just marry them up and try to clear their inventory out.
Okay, so which board would you recommend then?
I mean, just type in B650 and then look at, like, find one that has all the parameters that you want. But on Amazon, they're going for like $150, like what Zeph was saying. So if you got 150 plus your processor, you're probably, I think they're want for, I don't know what they want for the 30 or for the 7950X, it's probably like $500, but you're still cheaper than what that combo is. Okay. Or a lot cheaper, but a lot more affordable.
Here's a question. So like, what is it better to try to get like a really beefed up rig, or is it better to have like two lower level rigs, because like your two lower levels would compute more or like have more hashing power than like the one big one?
That's what I was telling Zeph, is like, if you're gonna do like, if you're trying to build a farm, like more efficient with your hash, you're gonna want to do the 3900X's, because I can buy two of those for the same price as one of the 7900X.
Yep.
And a 7900X is giving Zeph like 15 to 17 or 18 if you can tweak it.
Yeah.
1,000 kilohash. Two of the 3900Xs that I would hook you up with would do 26 to 30 kilohashes.
Interesting. So then, like, what does it look like if you want to have multiple rigs set up? So, like, I know from a hardware perspective, how does that work if you're trying to run, again, like multiple machines at once? So if I wanted
to plug them into the internet and you're good to go.
Exactly. It's just power and internet is all you need. And every machine is going to take 150 watts or under. It's like 130 to 150 watts approximately. So you can put like on a 15 amp household circuit. I think I calculated at one time, you can put like 12 machines or more. You can put a bunch of them on one circuit. Like, it's not, I could do the math, but it's.
Yeah. Well, what is like the electric, if you had five of them running 24/7, what do you think that would increase the like electricity bill in a house? Like, what does that look like?
That's like basically Logan running like five light bulbs.
Oh, so it's like super cheap.
Well, it's like, imagine like 150 watts of piece light bulbs, like old school light bulbs. It's not.
I mean, I don't even know. I don't even know what my electricity bill is now, bro. I don't look
It upset. It was like on typical American power. It's you're running about $5 a day. I'm $5 a month on power.
That's way. So basically, you have your cost of equipment, and then maybe like $5 a month per rig, as far as like overhead costs and electricity.
I'll tell you exactly what it is right now. It's going to be for 135 watts, which is what a regular like rig is going to run. And then for 11 cents per kilowatt hour, which is pretty much a good average for the national, it costs $10.69 per month in power. So we were off, but not by much.
Yeah. So $10 per rig. So if you had five rigs running, you're looking at like $50 a month and.
Yeah, so like right now, 3900X, if it takes 135 watts with the fee for the pool, I'll tell you exactly what you're going to net. So this is based on the current like difficulty and network, you would make $52 of profit per month. So you would mine 1.82 ZEF, which would be $62.85. And then after you minus your $10.69 of electricity, you'd have $52 and change of profit.
And of course, Logan, you're like, we're not like doing this to get profit off of like $35 ZEF. Like it's just completely irrelevant.
I mean, if you're able to hold this ZEF for, you know, let's say it runs to a couple grand, like if it pulled a CASPA, damn, bro, like you just came up heavy.
The gamble is you're pulling a CASPA run. You're going to be like at $1,000, you know, a coin on this, and you have mined like, let's say 10 to 15 of them, a course of a year. So now it's like $15,000, something like that.
Yeah.
So, and it's like a different style of like entry into the ecosystem as opposed to just like, you know, like the other opposite would be like, okay, if the price is going to 10X anyway, should you just buy the coin? Yeah, you could make that argument as well. That like,
yeah, but then you have a paper trail of buying it and everything. Like you said, this is a different process. When you mine it, you're bootstrapping it from the ground up, and it's in the untraceable world too. So that's,
yeah.
You know, put two together.
It's yours, and it's just yours for good. So that's why I'm like renting a couple of rigs, and just kind of like I figured, you know, having a good like, you know, over a few years, having like maybe 20 to 30K worth of like, you know, untraceable is kind of a good thing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, if you just looked at it from like your risk. Your worst case scenario is probably just like breaking even, you know, if the thing doesn't do what it's supposed to do, if it just goes up. I mean, if ZEF goes to a couple $100, let's say it doesn't ever get like full adoption, which I think it has like a pretty good chance.
You can break even at this price, mining wise, if it stays even here.
Yeah, but I'm saying like to make it worth your time of like if I'm gonna go fucking set up, you know, it's like
it's
fun though. It's fun to go secure the network and like, all right, I got this cool little thing that's printing money and it could make an extra. I mean, over time, like, but do you think so? If the price, so eventually, if ZEF goes to like $1,000, and you have five of these rigs that are mining. You're not mining one a month anymore. You're probably mining like a lot less than that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's going to happen. Like, it's like Seffy was saying, when the price goes up, increase of adoption and mining goes up too. So your difficulty goes up. The amount of coins you mine goes down.
And there's no one that's going to come out with like a fucking, I mean, you're saying it can happen that someone comes out.
Well, no, they did. So that's why I was hitting the request button earlier, is that we started talking about ASICs. So there ASICs are application integrated specific circuits. So they're machines that are made to mine a specific algo rhythm, and they can't mine other things. There are, Bitmain is the one that makes those, the largest ASIC manufacturer in the world. They did make a machine to mine Monero. It's not an ASIC because it uses RISC-V chips. Basically, to make the long story short, is that it's a machine that can mine all sorts of other CPU algorithms. It currently cannot mine Zephyr. There's speculation that it can, and that they're modifying it so that it can in the firmware, because it can mine Monero. But what that machine is literally a bunch of CPU chips with DDR4 RAM. Like, they've already opened it up and looked at it. They know who the manufacturer is and everything. And so all it is a bunch of computer chips that are inside of one rig that you can mine a CPU algorithm with. The 3900X, the 5900X, 7900X, all these AMD Ryzen processors are more efficient. than that RISC-V architecture is. So you're not getting that saturated in efficiency if they do put a bunch of those out on the network, number one. Number two, the RandomX people that make RandomX, they've seen Bitmain doing this, and they've already started to put updates into the algorithm that will be released in 2024. And this is public information. It's on their open source, like change logs. But they're going to release an update that will make those RISC-V architecture, those Bitmain machines, like 10 or 15% less efficient than they currently are. And it's going to also make your AMD Ryzen processors 25% more efficient. So it's going to hurt them and help you a lot. And that's one of the ways that RandomX is trying to keep the network more for home miners. So to answer the question, like long story short, is that, yeah, there will be Moore's law still going to apply here. There are going to be like computational increases that happen, but the RandomX people and the algorithm is set up so that home miners will always have an advantage of it. So long story short is I wouldn't be worried about it personally.
Got it.
Would you go 64 gigs of RAM, 232 sticks, or is 32 sufficient?
I think 32 is fine. If you're going to go the 7900X route, you might want to just go a little more. But I know like with the 3 and the 5 series, like with the lower end AMDs, like you just need 16, I think. Or some people were even use 2 4-gigabyte sticks. But I always just went to 16. So they're so cheap now. Like you can buy 32 gigabytes of RAM for pretty much the same price as you can for half the amount.
Okay. Does it matter what brand I use? As long as I get the 6,000 megahertz.
It doesn't matter the brand. It's more about the timing. So most RAM is made by like 2 or 3 companies. There's a company called Hynix, and then there's another company called like Micron. Those are what's like, if you buy like Corsair RAM, they don't make their own RAM. They buy chips from Hynix or Micron. But yeah, that's you want to look at the timing, because when I'm basically long, but where I was getting at is that a lot of the RAMs, like when you buy them brand to brand, they're made by the same one, and you just have to find the timing that works the best because they're just white labeled.
Okay, so the 6,000 megahertz is, that's what Steffi
for said. For DDR5, yeah, that's what you want, is you want higher megahertz for RandomX.
Okay, and then just make sure you get it compatible with AMD versus the Intel version.
They should work for both, but what you're seeing on like the marketing or the advertisement on there is that AMD calls it Expo for the 7 for the AM5 motherboards, and then Intel calls it XMP. Like that's what they call their profiles that are set up for like idiots like all of us that can just click a button.
Yep.
So if you see it where it says like XMP profile, it probably is also AMD compliant. They're just marketing towards the Intel people.
Okay. And then you think $230 for 64 gigs of RAM is decent, or should I try to go find it cheaper somewhere else?
Well, are you you're gonna get this AM5 board?
Yeah,
like the 7900X.
Yeah, so I found the 7950X for $500, and I found a motherboard, the 650, the B650 Plus for $150.
Yeah, perfect. That's what you want. Like, so I just read the document. Some people like on Reddit or whatever were talking about the A620 motherboard, the one I got, and it turns out like it's just got shitty like temperature management on the board. It's not really meant to do very much overclocking and may not be able to handle very much of it either. So it's like people aren't impressed with using this basic one. So I think I thought go basic because, you know, like the basic one for the one that the basic rig that Up had mentioned previously was so cheap. This one though, like for these higher level AMD5 boards, you really need to get in that $150, like the A650 range. Otherwise, like you don't get very many settings. So I think Up, the problem overclocking on mine is now is like, I just got the wrong board and it's just not going to do as good of a job.
Well, there's three different types. There's like there's the A620, the B650, and then there's the X670. Those are all different architectures for the same AMD board. And you basically bought the cheapest one. There's like a cheap, a good, and a better. So yeah, what Steffi's saying is right. Like if you want to avoid any of the potential headaches, just get the B650 because it's like the middle grade one.
Does B650 Plus versus
The whatever comes after that, the plus M, blah, 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 that's just what the board has. So the 650 is made by, it's like the architecture from AMD that they gave that company saying, this is what you have to use. And then like whatever the manufacturer is, they add stuff. Like Steffi was saying, some of them have Wi-Fi on them. Some of them have extra NVMe slots or more RAM slots or whatever.
The 650 like, comes with like almost all of them come with the appropriate amount of, well, it has Wi-Fi 6 for starters, but it also has like other slots and things so you can use it as a regular computer if you want to. But these NVMe hard drives are pretty damn good. Like they're small and they're fast. Like you don't need a whole lot of other crap on your board, honestly.
No, you wouldn't need it.
Yeah. Besides, like the only other thing you might add would be like a GPU if you want to game on the computer or something like that. But that's about it, really.
Okay. And then if I have like a 8 or a, I think it's a 4-6 terabyte solid state drive, if I just plug that in and run rigs off of that, that should be sufficient for.
Yeah, more than enough.
More than enough, yeah. You don't need much hard drive capability like at all. Very, very basic. Like mine's running on like a USB stick right now, for example.
Oh, okay.
And if you're not going to game, don't even get a GPU because the 7 series has built-in integrated graphics.
Yep. You can actually see, you can actually hook up a monitor and like troubleshoot it if you need to, which is nice.
Okay.
On the 7 series.
Last question. So I see I can get that 650 board for, I think it's $188. It's an ATX motherboard. Does that matter?
Yeah. So that's your blueprint of the size of the motherboard. If you're going to use like an open rig, it doesn't matter because it's open and it probably has the capability to mount any of them. But if you're going to buy a case for that computer, you need to buy a case that is compatible with the ATX board.
Yep. Usually the ATX like mid-size cases, they will handle the standard case will handle the width of the heat sink too. So remember, there's that big fan and heat sink. So if you want to be able to close the case, you need to have it like, you know, compact enough to do so or whatever.
And then
you want to look at the height of the, when you buy a case, it'll tell you like what the parameters are of what it can take. And you'll say like cooler height and you'll just want to make sure it's that or under for your cooler or you won't be able to close it.
If I want to just like 3D print a case for it, I could just do that, right?
Yeah. People sell 3D case because CPU mining is all about efficiency and cool. Like they try to keep them cool. A lot of people don't put them in cases. They just have open rigs. And one of the things you can do is 3D print and open. Like it's like a little stand that sets them up vertically so that you can stack a bunch of them in a small area instead of them being flat.
Okay. And then I can save $30 if I buy it used like new. Do you think that matters at all?
For what?
Is there anything that the motherboard?
You could try it. That what that is, if somebody ordered it and said, yeah, I don't want this, and they sent it back. So it probably is okay. But I buy like CPUs, but with everything else, I just buy new just because you're not gonna save much. You're gonna save like, you know, probably like $5 or $10 or whatever. And
yeah, and if you're missing like mounting screws or some other bullshit, then you're like just pulling your hair out messing with that shit.
Okay. That's exactly what you're gonna miss is like a wire or like a mount, like Steffi said, like mounting stuff. Because somebody took it out, tried to do it, and then they would for whatever reason send it back, and that's what they don't like. If you use your imagination of what you would do, you know, you just throw everything in a box and send that shit back.
Yep.
Leave the screws on your table by accident.
And once I get the 79, so I made the mistake of getting the wrong motherboard here. Otherwise, I'd probably be able to pull like a few more thousand hash out of this this chip. I think this would run like probably 19,000 to 20,000 if I had the overclocking. But at this point, like my overclocking blows, and that's part of the problem. It gets to heat with the boost mechanism, but it's not able to like simultaneously do all the core like ratio changes to make it work. So your motherboard would be the right one. And I think when I get the new one, I'll be able to post like what the 7950 actually does. I think all my shit will be in by Friday. And I'll put it together and like see what kind of hash rate we get with that. But I suspect that one's probably going to be like, I would think it's going to be in the 22,000 plus range, I would imagine. Because it's got 50% more cores than this.
Your motherboard still might be able to do it, Steffi. I was reading about it and I think they disabled the function we were talking about because I don't know if you saw, but there's 3D chips out for gaming. And for whatever reason, like the MS, like the 7000 series was having trouble with the 3D chips. So they tried to disable, they made it better for noobs, for people not to screw it up.
Okay. Okay.
So, they said that version was the April 23rd one that you were talking about. I bet you that if you downgraded your BIOS, so that's not the newest one, it would probably turn a lot of those functions back on, because they literally turned them off.
What a bunch of jackasses. Okay, good. I'll look into it. Yeah, I definitely want to fix that, because it'd be nice to be able to solve. Like, I don't want to buy another motherboard just for this.
And it shouldn't affect you, because they said that the problem, there was like a voltage issue with the 3D chips, and we're not using 3D chips. So what I'm saying is downgrading it shouldn't cause any issues with the processor that you have.
Let me see if any of the other guys here have some questions.
Yeah, I've got a question for Up. You were mentioning that they will actually change the RandomX code to make it basically a little bit harder for these RISC processors to mine it and make it easier for EPYC-style CPUs, right?
Yes, so, in fact, you can Google that. If you Google RandomX, RandomX upgrade, you'll probably see a lot of people talking about it in the community.
On Monero, right? So they just copy it over from Monero. Will that require actually a hard fork?
No. Because it just updates the miner that utilizes the algorithm. So XMRig's software itself, like when you go download XMRig right now, it's like whatever version it is. When they do all these upgrades and everything, you'll be able to download a new.
Yes, I understand that. But who defines basically what's an acceptable block? Because right now, I think it's every 2048 blocks to change the K randomly. That's basically what makes these ASICs basically impossible, because they change the underlying function, right? So it's basically you have to throw.
I don't know the exact exact technicals on it. I know that the reason why the current Bitmain X5 can't mine Zeph yet is that I mentioned this several spaces back, but somebody was poking around inside the code and saw that it looks for a specific height, and because Zeph is a newer blockchain and Monero is 10 years plus old, it can't see the height, so it automatically, like, it goes to look for it, says, oh shit, it's not that, and then it airs out.
You see, when it basically comes to these mining functions, right? So what RandomX does is it needs to find a certain function. So it's basically good for CPUs because it's integer and float operations. GPUs are not very good at that, so that renders out the GPU part. And ASICs could do actually that pretty well, but if you change the formula that you calculate your math with every 2048 blocks, you can throw the ASICs away because they can't deal with a constant that's changing inside the formula. You see? So that's basically the thing what they do with RandomX, right? And they derive that new K from the first 64 blocks that were mined in these 2048. So it's a kind of a sneaky way to do it. But I think it has to be embedded in the protocol, because who's going to not validate that block as valid, right? So the nodes have to not accept these blocks if they don't play by the game, right? So it's not about the mining software. It has to be the blockchain. So I think...
No, you're exactly right. And that's why I think that's where 1024 comes in with huge pages and everything too. So what I would do if I was you, because you're probably more technical in this than I am, is to get on the... Because Monero has like all of the... or the RandomX guys too, they have like either on their GitHubs or on the actual forums where you can get in and have discussions with the developers about what they're doing and how they're doing it. But I do know that it will affect all of the RandomX miners, because miners in the community were excited about it because of the fact that it's going to keep CPU mining intact more than
what I saw on Cepher is basically that it just take the main part from Monero and just modify it a little bit. At least where it comes to the mining and the whole block generation thing, they just modify it a little bit. They have a whole new thing for the stablecoin management and all this adaption, right, that you need that Monero doesn't have. But most of it is just a Monero clone with just some additional variables, right?
Anyway, I think that's exactly the case.
Let's jump to see if some of the other guys have some questions here. Dirty Toothpick, go ahead. You have any questions, comments? Or Max or anybody. We've been kind of like ignoring everybody for a little while here. Max or Toothpick, any questions? Maybe not.
I'll ask a question then. So is there any difference between a Prime B650M micro ATX motherboard and a like just a 6500M?
I think just the size of the board and how much like crap extra stuff you can put on it.
Okay, so if I can,
so if you want the most basic thing, you just want like something that maybe like you can plug a GPU into, maybe it has Wi-Fi 6, that's probably good enough.
Okay,
whichever the lowest one or whatever that does all those things.
I think the basic difference between an MATX and ATX is like what Sefi said, it's just the number of PCIe slots you have.
Okay, but it should have the ability to overclock it pretty easily.
Yeah, like the that's going to be a different, like your 320 versus 650 versus 670. Those are that where your difference is, the overclock is going to be. But in terms of like what you can hook up to the board is the size of the board. So ITX is the smallest one. MATX is the second small, or is the, yeah, it goes up larger. And then ATX is the largest. And ATX will have like three or four PCIe slots, so you can do like a GPU and a couple other accessories. MATX will only have one slot, so you can only do a GPU.
Okay. Do you think it's
some of them will have a couple of them, but like, most of us, like most people are, especially just for mining, you could use any of them.
Okay. Do you think it's worth going up to the X670 motherboard for like an extra $100 or no?
Probably not.
If you're gonna be a gamer and everything, and you care about like having all the coolest newest stuff, no. But if, or maybe, but I want it. Like if you Google X70 versus B650, X670 versus B650, and it'll tell you like the pros and cons of it. Back in the old days, where when they, before the manufacturers got really good, they would like have better features on the X series board.
By now, if you're not an absolute like, you know, gaming dork that wants the absolute like max juice out of your computer, this thing probably doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. Exactly. Like, I mean, even like, the AMD five series are giving you like the 5900X is like can give you 100 FPS on any game right now. So going to the 7 series like Sefi has is just future proofing yourself.
Yeah, this is like, I mean, like you can play just about anything on something like this.
And so, you can play two games of just about anything.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like, and stream the video and have Twitch going and all sorts of stuff.
32 threads on this goddamn thing. It's a lot.
Do you really see much mining increase then between the two, or is that really just going for the future proofing aspect?
Between the motherboards or between what?
Between the like 7950 and the like 500.
Yeah, 7950 will most definitely have more mining capability because it's got 32 threads instead of 24. So there'll be some difference. So you can just basically take the cost of the chip and divide it by the number of threads. That gives you the cost per thread, essentially. But the threads make a big part of the difference in terms of hash rate.
It does, but you're still limited to like the cache and the power. We should wait, Sefi, to see what it actually does. Because like I said, the 3950 only gave me 1.5. Even though I had 6 more cores, I only got 1,500 more hashes per second. And that the reason why is because you're still limited to where like how much cache you have to transfer all the information from your RAM to your processor, and then you're still limited to the power that's being thrown at it. Like if your total power is still 140 watts under 12 cores, it's still 140 watts under 18 cores. You're just spreading it.
Okay. So
you will get more hash, no doubt. But I don't know what I'm saying is it could be diminishing returns on per dollar. Like it's not as easy as just saying per thread.
Well, yeah, you have marginal returns.
Exactly.
As it goes up, you're going to get less out of it. I'm just curious if the price really does go stupid, maybe an extra like 0.1 ZEF per month adding up to an extra ZEF over an entire year could be like an extra $1,000, right?
Absolutely. That's a great way to think about it. That's what Sefi did too. Like if you spend a little more, you're going to get more and spec mining, and like that's what this is all about, is what it's going to be in a year from now, not what it is today. Because if you're going to go off of what it is today, then just buy the cheapest, most efficient miner you can get. That's going to ROI.
The other thing is I have a business where like I could throw some of these computers over there after I'm done with them. Like let's say I want to mine for a couple of years and I don't want to afterwards, that I can use these computers for like different purposes. So I don't want to have to like eBay these things and like lose a lot of the value there either.
Well, you could always just take the computing power and then go the Akash route, and you could just offer it up, the services through that to people.
That's a good point. Yeah,
that's a good point. I haven't. And tried then this that. Com-
this computer should be pretty decent. Cepheus model should be pretty decent for like if you were to download and run on your computer AI models of different kinds or graphics and stuff like that, I'd probably be decent at that as well. And that, I mean, and depending on what you do with your life, and if you're into content creation of any kind or you're an artist, then being able to do that locally wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, you can buy one of those NVIDIA AI specific graphics cards for like $40,000 and run a pretty substantial size model on there. I mean, if you have the money and you want to play around with it.
They're definitely getting better at making smaller models that run. Like there's an LLM, like a chat model, you know, kind of like ChatGPT that's local, that I think it's only like 8 gigabytes, and it's running relatively fast on local computers with pretty good performance, including being able to look at like and classify visuals, like graphics, like pretty well. And that's a recent release, and this stuff is all open source. So the efficiency of these things are going to get better too, if the model only is stripped down to what really works. But having something like, I couldn't do anything like that on my laptop. It'd be neat to have a machine like this, like play with.
Let me jump back to Zeph for a minute, because like one of the guys in chat or whatever had a question. It was about the tokenomics, the max supply and the emissions. Do you want to speak to that real quick?
Yeah, it's 18.4. So in terms of the release, it's very similar to Monero, except that it was it's a little slower, so that it benefits the early adopters more. But in terms of the max supply, it's 18.4 million. In total circulation of when the supply kind of like really cuts off. And then after that point, there is a tell emission of 0.6 ZEF per block. So one of the issues with Bitcoin that people have taken is that once the halvings happen, like once we keep doing them, you're going to run out of emissions for miners to want to secure the network. That's why there's a tell emission. So 0.6 ZEF per block will be released. And like the year, I think it was after 10 or 12 years of when it launched. So like in the next 10 years or whatever, when 18.4 million is emitted, 0.6 ZEF will be emitted every 2 minutes after that, indefinitely.
Yep. So there's like a mechanism in place to make sure miners get paid something to secure the network. Otherwise, you wind up with that whole debate again.
Yeah, like a cliff.
So I think the tail emissions are fine because like, and really, to be realistic, like the issue is like when you're starting out in this early, we're so early in terms of either buying the coin or mining that like if there are emissions in the future or whatever, like, you know, the overall effect is not going to be a big deal because like, you know, these things can hit market caps of like 1 to 3 billion pretty readily. We're only at like sub 100 million. So at least for us, at least now, this is a non-issue.
It's actually needed too. Because if you think about it, like you were talking about it, the protocol being capital inefficient because it has to have so much collateralization, so you only have so much stable that can be created. If we get to the end of the protocol, 18.4 million, like that would pretty much cap it out. But with a tell emission, like you can always add in more over time, slowly, because there's a tell emission. So I like to think of it as like a way for it to continue.
That allows
to,
ZSD to be scalable.
Basically. Exactly. It allows ZSBD to be scalable and to like allow it to compete or to exist in a world with infinite fiat.
And it continues to incentivize miners to maintain the network, right? I was talking to some Bitcoin maxis and they were like, we're never going to have more than 21 million Bitcoin. And I was like, well, then what happens when you run out of mined Bitcoin? And now like you're
What they always say in response to that is, oh, don't worry, we'll figure out in 100 years. But in reality, what happens is the world front runs that 100 years and like plans ahead of time. They don't wait till the last day when the last emission or whatever. Right. So it's like long before that, you wind up with these questions and then like that affects adoption. And then when you say like, well, let's add a tail emission, then people say, well, it's going to ruin the 21 million narrative. So like take your pick. Which one do you want? And then like there's this ordinals crowd that's like, well, if we generate enough like chaos in the network, then maybe we'll be able to like, you know, the miners will make money off of these like ordinals transactions or some shit. And like, I don't know if that makes sense or not mathematically, but whatever, they're trying.
I don't think there's a sufficient volume of, even with ordinals, I don't think there will be sufficient volume to maintain the network. Even with all the volume going on right now, it only accounts for like an extra 5% uptick in transaction volume. So
yeah, Oh, by the way, if everyone here hasn't done so, follow the Zephyr Protocol Twitter. It's at Zephyr something or another. Let me see. Hold on a second.
I think it's at Zephyr underscore org.
Yep, Zephyr underscore org. And yeah, follow them just so like it helps us keep track of like if you're new here, whatever it is, like approximately how many new users are coming into the ecosystem, especially if you like, you know, pick up the coin or like mine it or whatever it is, then hop on there and like follow them so that we have an idea. I don't know that they say too many things anyway. It's just follow just for like following sake so we can see the metrics.
Yeah, I think they just announced the listings and like the new stuff they're doing. They're not, it's not a very active account in terms of every day, but they are, they do post all the updates though.
I don't know if Max or anybody else had any further comments, questions, or, and we're free to talk about anything pretty much, price action, whatever. We don't really, like, we don't really care what the subject matter is, just whatever, just having fun. It looks like there's, we're picking up pretty good, like, you know, higher lows as far as like getting past this, like, resistance on the way back to all time high. The way this sort of works is like, there's a rapid move up in price. Like we went from like $6 to 55, and then you get what's called a consolidation period because of markup. So when you're bidding up a price of a coin, like if everyone suddenly shows up and buys it, it'd be like, if you came to me, I sold you my Pokemon card for $100. And then you sold the Pokemon card to Up for $1,000, then Up sells the Pokemon card to somebody else for $10,000. And it's only because it's like super like FOMO going into it, has no relationship to real world value. Then what happens is when you go eventually try to find the fourth buyer, they want $10 for the Pokemon card. The price falls really quickly. So the markup period is a time where like this interesting like price discovery happens to the upside, but it's not the real price, so to speak. The real price is like price that is generated via volume. So what you're seeing is like the volume that's being generated now in the network is like $3 million a day or more. And when like, what was it up like a few months ago? It was probably like, you know, under a million or something.
A tenth of that. Yeah, it was like, yeah, maybe, it had, yeah,
probably a tenth of that or something, maybe $300,000 a day. So what you see is like, so volume times the like, and the so the number of times a Pokemon card changes hands will develop the final price. It's like, it's almost similar to how like the number of times a house changes hands. You know, if you're able to consistently get $1 million for your house versus like suddenly like some buyer shows up out of nowhere and says, I'll give you $2 million for your house. Does that mean that all the houses in the neighborhood go up to 2 million? No, it does not. So like there is a kind of like a market rate for things. So what happens to the markup period, you just get these wild rides upwards, which is normal. And then what you get is like consolidation period. So what we saw with this is it went to 52. It dropped to like at the bottom of like, I think maybe 24. And then sort of like started picking up again. And so what happens is the consolidation period actually takes a fair amount of time. Why? Because the first markup in price discovery, all that's happening is the bid is being hit a lot because a bunch of people like FOMO in, or like suddenly a bunch of buyers show up all of a sudden. You're marking the Pokemon card up really high. Then what happens is like selling takes place and that creates like an artificial dump, but there's no real liquidity there yet. So what that means is like when there's a low liquidity environment, the price can go up really quick, but it can also down really quickly when people try to sell into that low liquidity environment. And so you're going to normally see these kind of like really big pumps, then a dump. And then the market's going to say, okay, well, you know, this is now the new floor price. This is the normal price for this thing. And eventually like enough shares get traded hands at, you know, $5 or $30 or $35 a share for the coin. And then what you wind up with is like the price discovery to the downside, which is like, okay, how low can this go? You know, where does it finally get consolidated and then create a new floor? And then people are comfortable buying the Pokemon card. You know, they used to buy it at $10, but now like because it's rare or whatever, they're comfortable buying it at $100 because they believe a lot of other buyers are available for $100. Be no different than if you bought like a gaming PC and you want to sell it on an eBay, and then you go to eBay and like they're all like 40% off, right? Like that's like the sweet spot where almost everybody resells stuff for about 40 to 50%. So like that's like a standard eBay market for resale items. But same way here, like you're getting a price discovery, and then what happens is like you slowly have to go against resistance, which is the everyone that bought at like $50. they're upset that their price went down to 24, right? So there may be some of those people that are upset and they're wondering, oh man, this, I don't know about this coin. I want to get out. So there, so as it goes up back towards 52 bucks, you'll have a few people that are like, I don't know about this thing. I want to get out of this thing. I feel like I got burned. I bought it and I bought it too high and it went down, whatever. So what ends up happening is you wind up with this price action where there's like a resistance on the way back up when you have prior price action in that range. So in the short term, like that can, doesn't have to last very long though, because a lot of people that bought a new coin like this at a low market cap, a lot of people just buy it and hold it, right? They're not interested in selling it. But like some of the sellers might be people that bought in like at a dollar, or they might've bought in, like they might've mined it or something. So there's going to be some selling pressure. And then slowly, as you kind of go back to prior high, let's say, you know, in this case, 50 bucks, you can get really, really like strong price action again, especially early coins. And you may see another 10x. You might see it go from like, I don't know, $35 now or $55 to like $550. Like, holy shit, why does it do that? It's because, again, you're just bidding up the Pokemon card in the auction cycle. And just what happens is as price goes up, everyone shows up. So what happens is they buy it from the next guy and they buy it from the next guy. There's not many sellers. And it just pumps like straight up, like vertical. You've seen this over and over again in crypto by now. It's like the normal behavior. And that's just like how markups work. And then they can get marked down as well. And what you're looking for over the long run is higher lows. So like when I bought at $6, I wasn't really worried so much about where the top was. My wonder was, okay, what was going to be the new higher low? So in this case, it was like $25. Now we're at 35. So I'm still like well ahead of my initial position for my initial buy. And that's fine. And then like during this dip, I picked up some more. I picked up some at 27. Why did I do that? Because it seemed like it kind of, that seemed like a good place to buy in, because I was like 55 to 65% lower than when I, when the top or something. It already hit like 24 and went back up a little. So I picked up some at 27, and that's how I did it. And then like now, like slowly people are going to decide, like, am I going to wait for lower prices, or am I going to you know, miss it and it's going to go up. And some people, what they do is they miss it and then they go, oh, I missed it. And then if it goes past all time high again, they know it's going to be marked up. So what they do is they come buy the high. So very commonly what happens is people buy the top because they feel like it's breaking out again. Oh no, I need to jump in. I need to jump in. Instead of like just figuring out, oh, well, if I get it at 35, fine. If I get it at 25, whatever, who cares? It'll dip a bit and then it'll go back up. People make the mistake of like maybe going to breakout trading, which you can do, like it's fine. But the problem with breakout trading is you have given up some of the lows and you wind up paying a premium for that breakout in the sense that you're buying in higher. So you have to be always careful. That's why people say, like, you know, you don't really want to buy the resistance necessarily. You want to buy the support if you can.
Buying support is cool, but one thing that I really like to do is I really love the feeling of just sliding in with size and watching it go up. You know, but it feels good.
It does feel good, but it's not necessarily the best choice, but it does feel good, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm the one that slipped it, baby.
You know what I'm saying? We slip and slide all the way up. You know what I mean?
A lot of times I don't really overthink it. I just like, I'm like, does this look like a good price? Sure. I just market buy it. I'm not worried about putting limits and all that in.
Liquidity's there. You know, why not just snatch that sweet, sweet liquidity?
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? You thought it was going to be a lot of slippage, it would be a problem. But yeah, if there's not a lot of slippage, just go for it.
I mean, if it's a few percent, who cares? You know, at these levels, who cares about a few percent?
Right. Sure. So yeah.
I tried to play games yesterday and it bit me in the butt. Right. So I tried to sell out of Zeph temporarily, go do some other stuff maybe, and then come back with more money to go into Zeph. And I didn't do nearly as well as I would have liked on that. So I just bought back in around 35, and also yesterday too. I brought in a little higher.
At these market caps, it's all gambling anyway. It's like the volatility can be plus or minus 90%. So like you could buy in today, it goes down a whole bunch. You're like, oh, I got a good buy. And on the other hand, it could like double by the next day, and you're like, whoops, I forgot to get any. So it's like it's all gamble. Timing.
I'd be rather in it. This is one of those cases where timing the market probably won't work as well for me. I'd rather be in it than out of it. If I am going to try to time it, I should take other money that I'm willing to risk and not take away from my main Zeph stack. But it does look like it's going to be a fun coin to trade.
And very low market cap coins with relatively low float, like, you know, using technical analysis and shit is not as useful. You can just really just use percentages. You say, okay, what was the all-time high? How much pullback did I get from the top? 50, 60%? Yes, check that box. And if you're at a 50% pullback in a bull market, that's a very good buy, generally speaking. Could you get a 60%? Maybe. You might get lucky. In this case, you did, like 55% down or something like that. But there's no guarantee you're going to hit that. So to me, in a bull market, in a high volatility coin, like a 40 to 50% decline is enough for me to just go for it. That's what I do. Like it's as simple as that. And then if it's a bearish market, that's a whole different deal. On the way down, bear market, you can drop like 80 to 90%. So that's a different thing.
You could do quite well with that kind of a strategy, even bull or bear, with a kind of with an adjusted DCA, not where you're not just buying it like at a certain interval, but you're buying it percentage decreases and selling it percentage increases with a certain part of your stack. I was listening to one investor or trader guy talk who doesn't really need elaborate stuff.
All you need to know is the prior bottom and the last top. You don't really need to know any like all sorts of drawings and stupid trading view charts and shit. Like mathematically,
even if you're
it's
just,
fairly simple.
Even if you're just trading like a mutual fund or something like that, if you know the percentage decrease and increase and you go in over time. I was listening to a trader talk who does all kinds of elaborate stuff on the chart, and he said he's got a friend who just every time the market went down 20%, he bought. Every time it went up 20%, he sold some. And he did that for like 30 years, ended up richer than nearly anybody they knew.
Someone asked me like, why did you not just get an ETF this year, like, in stocks? And I was like, well, the reason is because if I have like 100 or 150 different stocks, what happens is I can then see the dips on each of those individually and buy them individually. Whereas an ETF, all you can do is buy the dip of the whole ETF, which may not move very much. Right. So like when you can dissect into the individual thing, my general tendency is like, okay, if you have a lot of different things you're exposed to, you're exposed to more dips. It's dip exposure that you're actually looking for, which is a weird way to look at it, but that's the way to think of it.
You're looking for things that you feel are undervalued. I'll never forget. I don't know if I probably said this on a space sometime in the last couple of years, but I'll never forget when Ford around 2000, the 2008 or so Ford stock went down to like $4. And this was just because the economy was so bad. People weren't buying cars, and Ford stock went down to $4. It had been up like way higher than that. And I said to the people in my MBA class, this is ridiculous. Ford has more trucks on the road than anybody. Look around you. We're in a rural area. Everyone's driving a damn Ford truck. Even if they can't, right now the FUD was about that small passenger cars weren't selling and they had too many at that time. But even so, I said, who cares about the passenger cars? Even if they got rid of their whole passenger car line, they have a business that's worth more than this. Their truck business is the majority of their money. And that's still true. I mean, there's so many Ford trucks on the road. And so I had a friend who silently went and bought, and then the stock shot up, and I that call ended up making him like $30,000. And he thanked me years later. He's like, hey, you really, my name's Grin in real life, but hey, Grin, yeah, wow. Yeah, I really made, and now he's like an executive somewhere. So I didn't have any money to put down on it at the time. I was a poor student. So I didn't have any money to put in on it. Couldn't make use of my own call. But that's the way it goes. If you have a fund, you don't see the individuals. You can't use discretion. Somebody else is using discretion, how they balance things out, or there's a formula. But you have to look for things that are relatively undervalued.
Not to mention, Grin, when you have a large basket of things, there are some things that when they dip, they're more important than other things that are dipping, right? Like, for example, if a stock, for example, is down, but it's a high dividend yield stock that's been around forever, and the relative dividend's high on that particular one, I might actually go in with a higher amount of money on that one, like, because the odds of that one going to zero are not very high, and like their dividend's high. So when the price goes up again, I got in at a very low level, and I can get more dividends from that particular one. Whereas when you own an ETF, you're not doing any of this business. And in fact, like in ETFs, they get bid up to the point where the dividend yield's relatively low. You're not actually capturing the dividend in the same way as you would this way. Now, the flip side would be individual ones. I have to pay taxes on every single dividend that pops into my, brokerage. But whatever, I don't really care, because I have access to those dividends. So I can reinvest those also into, again, the same strategy of like picking things that are down and have high dividends. And so you can be your own kind of hedge fund that way a little bit. But these like consolidation periods, like for Zeph, like if you look back at history of Caspa, you go through its chart and you want to like see what you know, Zeph might do. I think that's a pretty good lesson for like price movements in something that's being adopted aggressively. And there's reason to believe this is being adopted aggressively just based on sheer user growth, the amount of volume, the amount of money traded on the exchanges. You can assume this based on like the fact that we're coming into a bull market and people talk about this stuff more. You can assume this, that some of the people listening to these spaces probably picked up some or whatever. And then also like the mining profitability of Zeph is like second only to Caspa and Bitcoin now. So that means that a lot of miners are interested, which is what sheer advertising for everyone in the mining space. And the mining space are people that are like more sort of like elite crypto people, so to speak. They're sort of really in it in the sense that they are more than just normies, and they're more likely to tell their friends and whoever that they are mining this thing or whatever, you should go think about this, or they'll make videos and whatever. So that you just basically, the mining cartel becomes a shill cartel, and that's a very strong thing. And that's what Caspa had going for it. Now, that doesn't mean that every proof of work coin does this in terms of price action. There's a lot of little coins that don't do anything, right? A lot of new ones that probably drag and don't do much at all. But going to bull market, everything tends to catch a bid, and those things with better narratives catch more money and more attraction. I think this is one of them because it has a stable, it has a privacy, it has this like over-collateralized mechanism that like has been battle tested a bit under DJED. It has learned from a lot of the mistakes of previous chains, and it has like a better use case than just straight up Monero. And it also has like a utility for individuals, not just for groups. Like, because you can swap to ZSD in your wallet, that's in a private manner, that has a utility that nothing else provides. So I think that is the unique sort of case. And I think whale types who notice this are going to be like, shit, why would I want to leave this system? It makes way more sense to park my money here and leave it here than to go to something else where I have to like clock this in and someone records the fact that I have sold it or converted it to stable. Whereas in this case, that's not the case. You're just a black box. Money goes in, money comes out. And like nobody knows where it went. So I think this is going to be popular among people that want to store money and, you know, like, you know, don't want to worry about someone knowing that their bag got much bigger or whatever. That's an important sort of feature of it, I think. Anyway, we've been going on for a bit. I might hop off and like figure out my motherboard problems and like and start to get a better overclocking out of this damn thing. I wish I didn't buy that motherboard now, but what are you going to do? So what happens when you just go on Amazon and click buttons instead of doing some research? I'll sort it all out. Oh, hold up. Kareem wanted to ask a question, I think. Or Max, did you have any other comments, questions? You've been here. Let me see if anyone has any. Some people are just listening and hanging out in speaker. Kareem, you have a question or anything?
Yeah, I was going to say, I woke up this morning and Rune is 720 a pop.
That's good. Making its moves, huh?
Yeah. We should have a Rune space again soon. Shit's funny as hell.
Yeah, yeah. Like Bruce tends to like talk a little bit more about Rune. My Rune bag is sitting somewhere. I don't really worry about it too much. And I'm a little bit more interested in this particular project because the privacy narrative. That and the fact that like the market cap is so small, I'm going to make a good 100x on this bitch. So that's another, you're not going to make that on Rune at this point anytime in the near future. So I like these, finding a small market cap product like this that's hasn't really mooned yet is really, really important, I think. Because like this could go large enough to exceed like, you know, many of my other bags that have been there in higher cap stuff.
Would you say
easily hit top 20? I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah. Yeah. This could make top 20. It's possible. Absolutely.
I was going to say though, is this like the most conviction you've had on a project, or is it reminiscent of something in the last 5-6 years?
I'd say like, unless someone can pitch me something better, I haven't found anything better yet. As far as something simple, proof of work, secure, I don't have to worry about too many kind of complications.
I think the privacy narrative is really the biggest narrative, and people are still stuck on last cycle's narratives. They're thinking about L2s, and they're thinking about, you know, how many transactions we can get, and they're thinking about onboard more users and stuff like that. And that's all good and well, and that's awesome. But I think that the privacy narrative is going to be much, much bigger just because of the macro fundamentals that we have, like as a world and as a civilization. And I think that, people are slowly going to wake up to that. And when they do, there's so much liquidity and so much literal bullshit. Like, we can just sit in a circle and just jerk each other's dicks off all day about the next exactly. level two.
At some point, we just
shoot that liquidity into something that matters, you know?
So, this getting to like 1 billion market cap or almost like written in the stars, it's like, assuming no other like complication occurs, like from a pure adoption perspective, this easily has the $500 to $1 billion market cap potential very easily, like without even blinking an eye. So that part I think I'm comfortable with, as far as like the relative immediate growth potential, like not like long term. I'm talking about like growth potential within months type of thing. It can move quite fast. So that's a comfort to me that like if I'm going to take the risk and I'm going to like be going into a bull market with some capital, like where do I want to put it where I think there's a fairly high probability of it going up? And I think this is one of them. And it's one that hasn't really run yet like Caspa has, and because this has only been out since summer. So it's like relatively fresh in terms of people picking it up and understanding it and like hearing about it and whatever. Because I only heard about this, 2 weeks ago, maybe? Like it hasn't been that long. So
I think the first space I heard about Zeph was like 2-3 weeks ago with you and Bruce, and you guys were talking about how the price was like $7. A couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we picked it up about $6-7. Yeah.
That's but, wild.
And you probably shouldn't fade something we're interested in either, because we're pretty fucking we're pretty autistic about this sort of shit.
Yeah.
So we're like me and Bruce will talk about something for a year or two, right? Like it will never stop. So like it's like funny that way. So like it's funny how like a lot of chains and stuff, like they know that we'll hang out and we'll talk about stuff, but then they don't spend much time and effort to bother like talking about their products. But like, I like a product like this where it's like, it's so interesting that it talks about itself. Like you have like strategies with it. You have like certain, narratives, you have, you know, good tokenomics or whatever. You have like a reason to believe it, has good price action, all those things. When you put them all into one package, it checks off all the boxes basically. And then, so that's a reason to consider it. I mean, not like, and like anything, nothing's risk-free or whatever, but, I think because it uses the Monero RandomX algorithm and it's open source and everyone can check the code, no one's seen any problems with it yet. So I think I think we're in good shape right now. But anyway, all right. Well, get yourself a bag. I last bought more Karam at, I bought it at 27. I actually bought more at 27 than I did at 6, believe it or not.
My average entry is 27. So. You know, and I don't really tend to buy tops. You know, I love to buy tops, but I don't tend to for some reason. I keep stumbling, and I buy bottoms.
I bought the top at six, and I had no idea. I was like, you know what, the market cap was like fucking like 5 million at the time. Like, what, you know, what's a top, what's a bottom? It's all just nonsense at that level, right?
It's just like, you know, whenever you hear about it and you know that it's something that has a lot of room to go, like, who gives a fuck? Just ape. And so,
it's almost better to get a bag.
With size, it looked like a top, and I just don't think it was, so it's a little disappointing.
I usually have a simple rule. I usually don't chase. I'll usually, like, pick more up if it goes down. This one, I made the exception. I got more on the way up, which, you know, sometimes you'll do that with higher conviction. But like the first buy I made at 6, I'd fully committed to the idea that if it went to 3, I'll just, you know, double up. And that was kind of my plan. But then like it just kept going. And then I'm like, oh, well, whoops. And, you know, so there's always the sense that like you're always going to feel like you didn't get enough if it goes up. Obviously, that's just standard psychology. But
at the end of the day, like I'm really here to have fun and try to progress society in a way, you know, like try to vote with my dollars on the chart, you know, and for something that I think
that's pretty much exactly myself too. Like I used
and to so like stuff. You know, I kind of like to buy the top because, like I said, this is actually insane, and I don't know if anybody else should think this way, but personally, I love the feeling of slippage. I love slipping and sliding, bro. I like to get a bad entry. It's like, I'm the one that did that, bro.
I'm the one that did that.
Me.
Yeah.
You see that wick? That's me. I'm Chadwick. I'm going to name my first son Chadwick.
Chadwick. That was me. Anyway, I think I'm going to get going, guys. I've got to go do some other work, but it's been fun.
Yeah, good space, bro. I always love these spaces. Every time you have a space, I want to join. So, yeah.
That's cool. Hopefully everyone had fun and learned something and is mining or picking up some Zeph or whatever and enjoying it. Should be a good ride. All right. Catch you later. I think Kareem, you dropped off there for a second, but we'll catch you later.
Deuces.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payment. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss. And I'm liking the odds, fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Click the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lay stacked and non-toxic, just to get a better place, smacking on the hostage. Like the shit is play for keeps, clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Channel Spaces.